I am Pierre Lumumba here at the Manzoni Wildlife Estate in Machakos County in Kenya, and of course the continent of Africa. The conversations continue apace, and we look to history, we look to the present, look to the future. Today we look at the Battle of Isandlwana. And the Battle of Isandlwana goes down as one of the most epic battles, starting on the 22nd day of January, the year 1879. It was preceded by another battle, which we never talk about, the Battle of Nyanzane. And that the Battle of Nyanzane is normally described as the first Anglo-Zulu War, so that the Battle of Isandlwana is the second Anglo-Zulu War. And its significance was that the British lost to the Zulus. And the beauty of it is that the British were so careless that they thought that they could never lose to a ragtag army that was not armed. Of course, the numbers were overwhelming against the British. 20,000 or thereabouts of the Zulus armed with their short spear, their segai, which was a short stabbing spear, and of course their dreaded cow horn formation, which was a circular, which is still taught in schools of military schools in the world as a military tactic. The British were no more than 1,800. And what they did was to overwhelm the British in a surprise attack, and the battle continued, and they ransacked the camps and barracks of the British, and the British did not know what to do, because when they went into the camps, they took the guns, they killed those who were found there, and the Zulus were in a celebratory mood. And of course, it became something that was a source of pride for the Zulus, because they had succeeded in defeating these individuals and this particular empire, which said it could not be defeated. The message went to other areas where the British were already resident, such as in Natal. And the question was, what do we do? What they then did is terrible. They organized, they came back, this time with superior weaponry, and they went into Zululand and ransacked the headquarters of the Zulu kingdom at Ulundi. They ransacked it, burnt it down, and arrested their king, King Seshwayo. And when King Seshwayo had been arrested, what they did initially was to deport him to the Cape Coast, and ultimately he was taken to London, England. The whole idea is that they were then, after the initial defeat of the Battle of Ulundi, is that the British now took the view that they had to take this territory, and to remove King Sechuayo was an attempt, of course, to create disharmony and discontent amongst the Zulu people. And there was, because succession battles then were supposed to arise. They did not arise because there was still loyalty to Seshwayo. And when he was in Cape Town and ultimately to London, the British were now beginning the process of annexation of the Zululand. And they did so in 1887. But prior to that, Seshwayo had been allowed to return to his kingdom in 1883. And when he did, of course, he was disempowered. He did not have the territory that he had, and he was allowed to only administer to the extent that the British could allow him to do. And the essence of the Battle of Isandlwana is very much comparable to the Battle of Adwa in Ethiopia by Menelik II, because it demonstrated to the Africans that it is possible to resist the British or to resist the colonizers. And in this regard, that part of the world had been dominated or had been invaded by two sets of colonizers, the Boers, who themselves fought with the British, and of course the English. And they concentrated the English on what is essentially in Zululand, in the eastern part of it. So when history is written, what is normally significant about the Battle of Isandlwana can be categorized in the following ways. Number one, it demonstrated to the British that their rule was an unwanted rule. And it also demonstrated to the world that if you came to our territory and wanted to disturb our systems of governance, we would resist. And the Battle of Isandlwana also exposed to the world that there was a kingdom that was organized and that that kingdom was amongst the Zulu. And it's not lost on me that the Zulu kingdom, as a result of the Battle of Isandlwana, which is normally narrated to Zulus even as we speak now in the 21st century, the Zulu kingdom was never quite dominated and decimated in the manner that the other kingdoms were. So that even today, the Zulu kingdom is a kingdom that is alive and well, and its culture and tradition has not been decimated. So that we have a kingdom called the Zulu kingdom. It is run on the basis of the rule, the culture and tradition of the Zulu within the context of modern day South Africa. And it is a kingdom which has remained because they were able to negotiate even after the capture of Sesheshwayo. Of course, the negotiations was not on equal terms as it would have been if the Battle of Isandlwana's victory would have been carried over. But when Sesheshwayo was exiled to Cape Coast and ultimately to London and being brought back in 1883, a lot of concessions were made. And the British, of course, then said, you are now a protectorate. And because you are a protectorate, there are certain things that we are going to ask you to do. But we are not going to interfere with your culture. And that is why they were allowed to proceed in that manner. And this must also be understood in the context of the concept of indirect rule. Indirect rule to mean that the British, to the extent that it was practically possible and feasible, did not interfere with the finer details of how kingdoms were run, as long as those kingdoms were responding to their needs. And their needs in those early days was whether they would get agricultural produce, and when there was mining, of course, they would be allowed to mine. To that extent, the Zulu kingdom has remained intact. The third thing for which the Battle of Isandlwana is famous is that the Battle of Isandlwana allowed the world to know that African kingdoms had military formations. And to date, we still read about how during the reign of King Chaka of the Zulu, the assegai, the short spear, was then in use. And there was a philosophy behind it in terms of close combat and the cow horn method formation of fighting, I'm told, is taught in quite a number of military schools. So that also is a major contribution that the Battle of Isandlwana did expose the world to, and it is a source of African pride in that regard. The Battle of Isandlwana is also important in terms of contemporary African politics, particularly within the South African territory, that it was one of the very few territories that said that even as we interact with the rest of the world and even as we interact with different systems of governance, we are going to retain our cultures and modes of choosing our leaders. And indeed, today, one can see that as a result of that victory, it has created an environment where even politicians of Zulu extraction, whenever they want to participate in the politics of Africa, of South Africa, they still must have the approval, tacit or otherwise, of the kingdom of the Zulus. And one will remember in the run-up to the apartheid, in the run-up to the destruction of the apartheid regime, people like King Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who was one of the key fighters against apartheid, always went back to the Zulu kingdom because the Zulus carry themselves as these victors against the British. When history, therefore, is written, the Battle of Isandlwana will always go down as one of the very few occasions where African resistance did subdue and humiliate a foreign power which proceeded on the premise that no African army had the wherewithal to decimate them. They were decimated, they were humiliated, and they were brought to the negotiation table, and the Battle of Isandlwana stands as such a battle that ought to be celebrated as we celebrate military power of Africans. The last thing that we must remember about the Battle of Isandlwana is that it became the basis of preservation of Zulu culture. And still today we see that the Zulus are very culturally anchored, so that while Christianity has its place in amongst the Zulu people, there are those who can be characterized as Zulu traditionalists. And we see even in modern days that some of the implements or some of the weapons that were used during the Battle of Isandlwana are celebrated and used and displayed even in modern day politics in Zululand, in what is called KwaZulu Natal. The Battle of Isandlwana is a clear demonstration that even if what you have won is the battle rather than the war, your dignity can never be taken away. When the Zulu won at Isandlwana on the 22nd day of January 1879, they told the colonizers, "You cannot come into my land and take it without my resistance. We resisted, we bloodied your nose, and you may do what you want, but that is only for a moment. In the fullness of time, we'll regain our dignity and we will never surrender our dignity to your powerful weapons." That, I think, is the eternal history of the Battle of Isandlwana, that you cannot be subdued without resistance. Thank you very much. We continue with our discussions about matters African, and we have had occasion to examine the epic Battle of Isandlwana, but we shall come again as we continue our conversations.